Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 116. My name is John. I'm going to take you on a trip so far from here. I've got two tickets in my pocket. Now, baby, we're going to disappear. Our annual custom didn't begin in earnest until 2002 to celebrate our third anniversary. We got married in 1999, had a very nice week away for our honeymoon, of course. For our first anniversary, we spent an extended weekend in Austin hanging out with some friends. The second anniversary was another extended weekend at a bed and breakfast in Stonewall, Texas. We had met some nice couples there, and I vaguely remember there was talk about everyone booking the place again the next year. I think that's where the idea was planted, for Gina and I to do some special getaway for our anniversary. Around that same time, we realized we were only trying to have children because that's what was the expected thing for a young couple to do. But it wasn't really what we wanted to do. So now we had time to get away that our friends who wanted children could not find. Plus, over the first couple of years of our marriage, we had eliminated our debt, and I was getting some travel perks as part of my job. We decided that for our third anniversary, we were going to take the entire week off and go someplace nice. It's been our tradition ever since. We've been to 31 states and 6 countries on our trip so far. Prior to our fourth anniversary, Gina bought me a digital camera. She had no idea what kind of monster she was creating. Between digital cameras and smartphones, I have around 36,000 photos now. I would guess around 70% of those are from our vacations. I took nearly 2,700 on the trip we just completed. I grew up poor white trash in San Antonio. When I was a kid, a vacation was a 3-day weekend down in Port Aransas or up at a lake house owned by my mom's co-worker. The only other times we even left the city was to go to a family reunion in Pflugerville. And yes, Pflugerville is a real place. I didn't even leave the state of Texas until Gina and I went on our honeymoon. Thanks to my life with Gina, I've been to places I never thought I'd go. I mean, this may sound silly to some people, but if you could go back 30 years and ask my teenage self if I'd ever get there, I'd have said no. I've driven across the Golden Gate Bridge, seen the Coronado Hotel where they filmed Some Like It Hot, seen the Goonie House in Astoria, Oregon, explored Arches National Park in Utah, walked Boston's Freedom Trail, took a train to the top of Pikes Peak, bathed in the pools of Hot Springs, Arkansas, walked on the beautiful beaches of Pensacola, Grand Cayman, Jamaica, and the Outer Banks of North Carolina. I've seen the Lincoln Memorial, driven the Sea to Sky Highway in British Columbia, seen the tugboats in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, toured the Mayan ruins at Tulum, seen Edgar Allan Poe's house, eaten lobster in Maine and beignets at Café du Monde in New Orleans, and watched the green flash at sunrise in the Dominican Republic. No matter what garbage we have to sift through with the foolishness of everyday living, Gina and I have set aside the week of our anniversary every year to get away from it all and celebrate. It's our opportunity to shed away all other concerns and focus on the one thing that matters most. Each other. But this year, we wanted to do something special because this year is our 20th anniversary. We wanted to go somewhere we wouldn't normally go because of the cost. Now, I'm not saying break the bank, but just go a little above and beyond the norm. After bandying about some ideas, we finally settled on the place. Maui. This podcast is a travelogue for Maui. You know, when and if you ever find yourself there. As always, I like to get the negative stuff out of the way first. This has absolutely nothing to do with Hawaii, but Delta's so-called Comfort Plus seating in the 3-3 configuration that we had on the over-the-water flights is useless. A couple of inches of extra leg room is meaningless without additional butt room. I'm the kind of person who can fall asleep on an airplane within seconds after takeoff. I was so cramped and uncomfortable on our red-eye flight out of Maui that even after being up for 16 hours and being thoroughly exhausted prior to boarding, I couldn't sleep. On the plus side, I got to see some movies that I hadn't gotten around to, so here's some quick hits for you. Captain Marvel. This was the Superman movie everybody wanted. The hero is eternally confident, it never feels like she's ever in any real danger, and she saves the day smiling. It's a run-of-the-mill Disney fest, and it should have included shiny, happy people in its soundtrack. But at least I had a heavy dose of Samuel L. Jackson and a cat. Godzilla, King of the Monsters. I liked that movie. It was an interesting take on other classic kaiju from Toho with some really cool battles. Toy Story 4 was better than I expected, and it had an ending that surprised me. But the documentary Batman and Bill had me in tears at the ending. And it is a must-see for anyone, not just comic book aficionados. Also, nothing to do with Hawaii, but I would really like it if I never had to deal with LAX again. I mean, who designed that place? We made some rookie Hawaii tourist mistakes. We took one checked bag for the two of us, and we were almost to the weight limit because we seriously overpacked. Pack light. And once you get there, go to Target, go to Walmart, and get a bunch of travel size stuff that'll be good for a week. Since you can't ship alcohol, go to the post office and get a flat rate shipping box. Put heavy things in that you can be without for 3 days, and mail that to yourself, then put your alcohol in your checked baggage. Unless you're doing something formal, or going hiking up in the mountains where it gets cold, don't bring pants. I wore shorts everywhere, even to the luau, and so did every other guy. And, in a bizarre twist from the mainland, gas stations closer to the airport seemed to be cheaper. As for the destination itself, I got nothing against beach bums, but some of them gave off a very creepy vibe. There was also a couple who got into a physical altercation right in front of our car. I had heard warnings of places to avoid because of less than savory characters, but that can really be said about any place you visit, so advising vigilance is redundant. You should do it anytime and anywhere. Hawaii has this reputation of being some magical, mystical, tropical place, doesn't it? When you think of Hawaii, you think of lush greenery, lots of palm trees and beautiful beaches. Well, the west side of Maui is, for the most part, brown and arid. The east side is the lush green part. The only time I felt like we had quintessential Hawaii was at the Black Sand Beach, which I will get to later. Hawaii is really just another tropical place. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some beautiful, thick canopies of vegetation, but with the exception of a unique plant that I'll also get to later, I've seen lush canopies of green in the Grand Cayman, Yucatan, Jamaica, Dominican Republic, and all of those had better beaches. Unless you want to surf, then yeah, go to Hawaii beaches. By the way, I'm about to try to correctly pronounce a bunch of Hawaiian names. I may or may not succeed. Now, tourists to my hometown often mispronounce names, like it's not Bexar, it's Bear. It's not Seguin, it's Seguin. And it's not Bourne, it's Bernie. So it happens to everyone everywhere. So if I make a mistake, relax. There wasn't any place bad that we visited during our stay on the island. But if I were to rank all of the places we went from how well it met my expectations, I'd have to say the bottom of the list is Surfing Goat Dairy. The cute goats, if you like goats, you might want to go there. But there's only a few you can actually get close to without going on the tour. And while their goat cheese was good, I've had just as good from the grocery store. So let me get to what is worth seeing in Maui. If you do decide to go to the dairy, just around the bend from there is the Ocean Vodka Organic Farm and Distillery. The grounds are beautiful. Flowering plants, fruit trees, a couple of dozen different types of sugarcane on display for the visitors. There's a charge for the tour, but I think it's worth it. We sampled 5 of the 6 spirits that they offered, and they were all excellent. For the first time ever, I enjoyed tasting gin. Say hello to Thomas O'Malley, the orange tabby cat that roams the grounds, and make sure you have room in your checked baggage for at least 1 bottle. When you're in Hawaii, one of the obligatory tourist things is to go to a luau. For the day of our anniversary, we went to the Old Lahaina Luau. I'm not convinced the roasted pig they uncovered was actually used to feed the hundreds of people there, but it was worth the show to see the roasting process. The food was amazing. I finally tried poi, and it was, well, it just wasn't good. But it's not the worst thing we've ever had on our trips. That dubious distinction goes to the Soapberry dessert in Vancouver. The dances were impressive, and all in all, it was a wonderful evening. Since I mentioned food, let me give you some dining ideas. Ichiban Okuzuya is a little walk-up kitchen with a couple of tables outside. Great food that's worth it, even if you end up eating it in your car. I recommend the beer can chicken from Threes and the banana macadamia pancakes from Kihei Cafe, both in Kihei. If you hop over to the island of Lana'i, stop by Blue Ginger and get the bento. If you're in the town of Lahaina, drop into Kino's for dessert. Order the hula pie. Ours was comp because our waiter, a fellow Texan, recognized my Bucky's t-shirt. And if you're in Kahului, stop by the kitchen and order pretty much anything. The Maui Plantation has some beautiful grounds to explore free of charge with lots of birds and flowers that make for some great photo opportunities. For a cost, there's a 45-minute tour of the farming area where you'll see tropical fruit being grown and a coconut husking demonstration. It takes up about half that time. You'll notice a pattern with the additional cost for tours at all these places. Are they worth it? I suppose so. I mean, they're a little more expensive than I think they're worth, but that's true pretty much of everything on the island. Might as well shell out the extra cash for the experience. Hell, wait until you hear what I paid for ice cream. At least the beaches are free and open to the public. Now, I love twisty mountain roads. Driving around Colorado and Utah up and down mountains was fun. The east side of Hawaii, where all the green is, has those roads. Except they aren't always two lanes. Sometimes it narrows down so much only one vehicle at a time can make it through. On our first day, just after touching down at the airport and grabbing lunch, we drove up to the Nakalele blowhole. At one point, going up a hillside, I had to stop and back up to allow a truck to pass that was coming down through a narrow stretch. I backed as far as I could, and he just got by. My back tire was mere feet away from the edge of a 100-foot cliff, and I did wonder if we were about to die just hours into our vacation. We found that if you take the longer drive around the west side of the island up to the blowhole, you'll have just a couple of narrow passes to deal with, and mostly it's nice, wide two lanes all the way through. Regardless of how you go, I recommend going to see the Nakalele blowhole. It's pretty cool, and there's a lady selling banana bread there. You'll find banana bread stands all over the place on the island. Hers was the best we had all week. The drive that is well known for being treacherous is the road to Hana. Now, personally, I don't think it was as treacherous as the drive up to the blowhole, but that's just me. It's about 30 miles to Hana from the airport. It'll take you a minimum of 2 hours. Up and down, twist around, stop to allow a car to come through a narrow stretch. The speed limit for most of the road is 15 miles an hour. If you're gonna do this, I highly recommend you start early. We started around 9 a.m., and I think that was a mistake. Before we left home, I hopped on Google Maps and I looked for things to stop and see along the way on the road to Hana. We missed several things on the list. Because of the limited parking, we did not get to see the Twin Falls or other waterfalls along the way, other than maybe a slow drive-by over a bridge. There's a small snack bar, appropriately called Halfway to Hana, but unless you need to use a porta potty or grab a snack and a drink, there's no reason to stop. Before the Hana Highway starts to really twist and turn, stop off at Hohokipa Lookout. There are some spectacular views, and there will likely be a bunch of surfers to watch. If it's early in the day or near dusk, drive down from the lookout to the picnic area and look for the sea turtles. Traveling through the Haiku area, you'll want to stop at Huelo Lookout. There's a little fruit stand there. Grab a snack, say hello to Coconut the Cat, and stretch your legs for a second while checking out the nice view of the ocean past the green hillside. Then, when you're close to mile marker 7, find a place to park. It may not be easy. And take some photos of the rainbow trees. It's a type of eucalyptus found only in the Pacific, with orange and green streaks in its brown bark. It was raining when we went through that area. I had to walk along a narrow section of street where a speeding car may not have been able to stop in time. But it was completely worth it to see those trees up close. I hear there are some farms and gardens in Maui that have the trees, but the natural grove is along the highway. The Waikamoe Ridge Nature Trail boasts some really nice views, but the rains had just come through and it was quite a bit muddy. And about half a mile into it, I had an I'm getting too old for this shit moment and walked back to the car. But hey, there was greenery that would make Swamp Thing proud, so if you like to hike, you ought to devote some time there. There's a place called the Garden of Eden that looked really interesting. It boasted a botanical garden that was one of the best on the island. But we were already way behind schedule, so we didn't go in. However, next to the entrance is an open-air barbecue. For $20, we got huli huli chicken, grilled pork belly, rice, tomato cucumber salad, and grilled bananas. It was quite impressive. And we were stuffed. Say hi to the peahens. And since there are no restrooms, hop back in your car and drive up to the Kuumahina lookout for facilities and a really nice view. There's decent restrooms and parking at the Pua'aka'a State Wayside Park. Say that three times fast. Across the street is a short paved walk to a lovely double waterfall. Definitely worth the stop and another leg stretch. There was a cat there. Nobody knew its name. But he did remind us of our little cat, Max. Miles down the road, you'll see a brightly painted van. That's Coconut Glen's Ice Cream. It's $7 for a very, very small cup of ice cream. I don't know if it was worth that much, but I will say it was some damn good ice cream. It rained while we were there, so we sat under a tent with Iris the cat waiting out the shower. There's also a tortoise on the grounds. Just down the road from there is a line of roadside eateries and a convenience store. Now, we were still full from the barbecue and the ice cream, so we decided we would stop on the way back. But by then, everything except the convenience store was closed. Finally, about 6 hours in, we got to the reason I wanted to take this island road trip. Honokalani, the Black Sand Beach. We pulled into the parking lot and saw our first mongoose. There were several skittering around, and we would see more later in other parts of the island. We slipped on some water shoes and walked down to the staircase to the beach, and it was actually just as much smooth black rocks as it was sand, and it made for an interesting walk around. There's a cave to the right as you come off the stairs, and that's definitely worth going in and exploring. There's one part that requires you to duck down pretty low, but after that, you can easily stand up straight and look around. This is what I was looking for the whole time when I think of all the movies and TV shows about Hawaii. This was the tropical paradise. We had more down the road. There was the town of Hana next. If we had a few more hours of daylight, we could have gone to see Charles Lindbergh's grave. But the Black Sand Beach was where we decided to head back. It was getting late. We stopped off at that line of roadside eateries so Gina could use one of the porta-potties, and she said it was easily the most disgusting bathroom experience of her life. I won't go into any further detail save one word. Maggots. We stopped at one waterfall on the way back because there was finally parking. But other than those quick two stops, we drove back in about 2 hours. It was a long, tiring day. But yeah, it was worth it. And then there's the highlight of the vacation. And one of the best individual days of any of our trips over the past 2 decades. The Lana'i Cat Sanctuary. We're cat people. I get it. Everybody thinks dogs are so great. Blah, 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 loyal. Blah, 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 loving. I had dogs growing up. My brother brought home a few strays that ended up being family pets. And yeah, dogs can be fun. One of those strays was a golden retriever mix that fetched tennis balls for me for many hours in my teenage years. And then there was Pete. He was a solid black kitten my mom brought home for me one day. He was the runt of the litter. The original owner told a story that I now question, that a large dog had wandered into his yard and threatened Mama Cat and her litter of kittens. While Mama Cat and the dog were in a stare down, Pete jumped up on the dog's head and dug his claws in, causing the dog to run away yelping. True or not, Pete was a really, really good cat. The house I grew up in had a small hallway about 10 feet long. I would close off all the doors, sit at one end with Pete, and bounce one of those little super balls off the far wall. Pete would jump up, and sometimes he would catch that thing. He curled up on my lap in the evenings watching TV every night. He was in bed next to me every night. Cats love you. They just show it differently. They will go off on their own for a while, but they will always come over for some attention. Dogs are just constantly needy. And a lot of them are way too goddamn jumpy. I don't need to give a cat a bath. I don't need to wake up in the middle of the night because my cat has to take a shit. And in the highly unlikely scenario where one of my cats gets wet, I guarantee they will not smell like rotting cabbage. You like that kind of stuff? Hey, then a dog's for you. I'm a libertarian. I thrive on independence. Cats are vastly more independent than dogs. So cats win in my book. On the island of Lanai, just west of Maui, there is an endangered species of bird. 10 years ago, that bird's eggs had a 20% chance of survival. Why? Feral cats on the island were killing them. Now, let's consider for a moment the collectivist solution to such a situation. There are cats killing endangered birds. What is the collectivist solution? Kill the cats. You think that's crazy? Okay, let's look at a real example from the reigning champion of so-called animal rights activists, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. This group of collectivists, PETA, kills animals. A look at the state of Virginia records of PETA's so-called animal shelter shows they've killed an average of 84% of dogs and cats under their care over the past 2 decades. That's just in one state. If that's their tactic there, you can bet it's just as bad, if not worse, elsewhere. In 2003, PETA ran a hypocritical campaign called Your Mommy Kills Animals, with a picture of a stereotypical housewife stabbing a rabbit because it's evil for you, as an omnivore, to dare to eat meat. In 2014, PETA was contracted to remove stray dogs in Norfolk. A woman has security footage of a PETA employee going into her yard and abducting her chihuahua. PETA was required to wait 5 days before doing anything to the strays they were supposed to round up. The woman realized her dog was missing, made some phone calls, told PETA there was a security footage, and 2 days later, the employee who abducted the dog showed up again to advise her dog was dead. The dog had been euthanized within hours of the abduction. How many other animals were brazenly abducted from their homes that didn't have security footage? How do you call that ethical treatment? That's what the experts do to animals. That's what the collectivists do. They force their morality on others. PETA doesn't believe in pet ownership. People shouldn't have pets. Therefore, when they have the opportunity, they kill the animals. It's horrible for you to eat the meat of a slaughtered animal, but perfectly fine for them to slaughter people's beloved animal companions. Can you imagine the massacre that would have happened if the inhumane PETA got a hold of feral cats that were killing off an endangered species? So what happened on the island of Lanai? A person who cared about the lives of both the cats and the birds came up with a different solution. She got together with some people, and they built a large enclosed area that currently comfortably houses 600 cats, and they're expanding to house nearly twice that many soon. The cats are captured, spayed or neutered, and then they stay in the enclosure. You can go there. You are welcome to go into the enclosure, walk around and find cats to pet, or just find a place to sit down, and the ones who want attention will come to you. Adoption services are offered. The entire operation is funded only by donations. So if you love cats, or if you just love animals, I would heartily encourage you to check them out and donate, if you'd like. Oh yeah, and that endangered bird that had a 20% chance of survival 10 years ago, it now has an 80% chance of survival. Both the cats and the birds have a better chance of survival because of a truly compassionate individual. They have an area for kittens to acclimate them to the habitat, an area for senior cats to relax without the hassles of the youngsters. I bet my old lady cat would like that. There's an area for sick cats whose illness prevent them from mingling with other cats in the main area, but humans can still visit them. And unfortunately, there's also a section for sick cats that cannot be touched without strict protocols to avoid contamination to other cats. Gina heard one cat currently in that isolation crying for attention, and it had her in tears. We were only there for 2 hours. We have considered just cashing it all in and going to work there for $15 an hour. That was our paradise. At the end of the vacation, Gina and I asked ourselves the same things we ask each time. Where does this rank in our travels, and would you go back? Where does this rank? Middle of the road. Top 10? Yeah, but probably not if you take out the cats. A few really nice memories and unique experiences, but also a lot of long hauls and cramped spaces in order to get to do expensive things. Would we go back? It depends. What kind of deal are we getting? And where do we have to sit on the plane? This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.